pandemonium reigns.
What was that? That's my biggest question coming out of Saturday and the Vols' performance over in Gainesville, Northwest, which is what I think I'm going to call Fayetteville, Arkansas, until things change over there because, well, you know, those games, the games that have happened in Gainesville over the last 20 years as well as Fayetteville, Arkansas over the last 20 years kind of mirror image each other, if you ask me. Garbage performance on the road. Tennessee drops the inexplicable type of loss much earlier in 2024 than at least 2022. 2023, you had Florida. You had the way that you lost to Missouri, all those things. And in 2024, it happens week five, coming off of a bye week when you're as healthy as you've been since week zero. And, you know, if there's 22 starters on the field, 11 on offense, 11 on defense, you know what? Let me leave the defense out of that. If there's 11 starters on offense, I've got about 9, 10 what the hecks for you guys. And really poor grades if I were to be giving them out. I'm not even going to bother because, well, I think my questions that I'm going to pose will give the grades for me. Just some what a comedy of errors Saturday was. I mean, quick, you know, synopsis. Arkansas goes full Mark Stoops on you, full Kentucky, and they take about 9 minutes, almost 10 off the clock. On a big trip that resulted in just 3 points, the only 3 points of the first half. And then, you know, again, Tennessee's offense just sputters and shoots itself in the left foot, then the right foot on offense in that first half is what that looked like. Didn't protect, didn't create separation, didn't complete the pass when the separation was there. And, you know, the running game wasn't its usual jovial self, full of sparks that keeps the chains moving, that makes defenses move up in order to give yourself some shot opportunities. You know, I question when we will – I don't understand why not attack the middle of the field in some situations or even run routes that would go over the middle. The route tree was a disaster. I was trying to give a synopsis. I'm already off on a tangent. Second half, you know, texting non-Tennessee buddies, and I'm like, we're doing it. We've adapted again. We've adjusted, made great adjustments at half. Here we go again, game on, so to speak. And you march down the field once with Sampson hitting a big run that you know, kind of exploited Arkansas and what they were in at that time. Another one that was propped up a little bit by Arkansas shooting itself in the foot, at least 1 foot here or there. I know there was a late hit on Nico on an incomplete pass to, I believe, Brew. But again, nonetheless, you go down the field, you get 14 quick points, and I had been telling everyone around me, if Tennessee gets this game to 14-3, it's over. And I think if you'd watched the game, you know, at least from my perspective, it should have been over. You should have been able to win to Oklahoma, Arkansas at that point. Just, you know, running the ball, running clock, defense continuing to stand strong, which it did for much of the night, as much as you can ask any defense to do with these modern offenses when you're facing Bobby Petrino on the other sideline, because he's still a dang good offensive mind. There is no denying that. But again, you asked your defense for probably too many favors, I think, especially when you bring in something like Jordan Ross and his attempted hero play to block that punt. I mean, Eckler's unit probably had their worst performance of the era, and he's been amazing on special teams, not allowing punt returns at all, fielding punts pretty cleanly, taking care of the ball and not costing yourself in that aspect of it. But again, it just comedy of errors. They came together to be the perfect storm to allow Arkansas to really continue what was an insane day of college football, where Alabama lost to Vanderbilt, where Miami stormed back in that fourth quarter and was like the only ranked team that beat an unranked team that day. You know, little exaggeration there, but what an insane day of football. We're like, yeah, let's go with that. You know, when you have an opportunity to separate at the top, when your rivals, Georgia and Alabama, have losses already, and again, Alabama had that loss as this game was kicking off, you have to take your opportunities to separate to join Texas at the top of the league, to join Texas A&M in conference, who's undefeated, which is mad credit to Mike Elko and really exploiting Missouri. Really, really good, huge credit to him. What a dominating win that was. But again, when you have an opportunity to separate at the top, you absolutely have to freaking do it. And it's like Dylan Sampson and a lot of the defensive players were the only ones that had that in mind. I mean, I've ranted, I've raved, I've given a brief synopsis of the game. You all watched it. We were all trying to heal past it, and I'm bringing up old stuff at this point. But some of these things I just have to ask. You know, when I was talking about having the opportunity to really Oklahoma that game, to really run the ball, you know, drain clock, also gain yards, perhaps give your defense a cushion because they've propped you up in the largest way possible that game. And, you know, you have the audacity to then, if you were trying to Oklahoma, if you were trying to be Arkansas on their first drive, to snap the ball with 15, 20 seconds left on the play clock, to, you know, this is a special type of play. This is not that, but you gain that big play on the Nico scramble left. What the heck, Lance Hurd? If you haven't seen that play, go watch it. Nico scrambles left, hits Thornton. Take a timeout there, okay? Take a timeout there. I know you want to exploit off of Arkansas having to sprint down the field and continue to move towards the end zone at that point, but you didn't, and you gave up 15, 20 seconds. So clock management is one of the biggest what the hecks in this game. Snapping the ball too early all throughout the second half. At the same time, barely trying your tempo in the first half or maybe the early parts of that second half. Just, okay, I've got a few questions for tempo. I don't think it's Nico. I think Nico's already proven in some of the lopsided wins, some of the, you know, the nobody opponents, that he can handle this stuff, okay? Look at the dot that he dropped against, to Thornton against Oklahoma. Look at the way that he has thrown over the middle in the early parts of the season. Now, and I mentioned that a moment ago, when they're dropping eight or a conservative seven, you know, and they're doing it from everywhere. They're doing, again, what Dan and I would have loved to have seen, where they're showing pressure from everywhere, then they're dropping out of it. I understand that the middle is not your best friend at that moment, just looking at, like, the pick that Nico threw against North Carolina State. But you do have to mix it up. You do have to bring your tempo, because when you refuse to run your tempo, then you are doing what Tennessee's not asked its team to do. You're asking your offensive line to win you games, to give great pockets, to consistently do these things in order to have movement down the field. If you don't use the tempo, then you have to impose your will at the offensive line positions. And, you know, we got Campbell for a whole game, most of a game. You know, we had a little Dane Davis, but I'm not convinced that Dane Davis shouldn't be your left tackle right now, because whether it was the fact that Hurd missed a month of football, whether it's the fact that he's afraid of getting hurt again, or he is still a little hurt, or, you know, he's got mixed signals coming in either side of his helmet ear holes, he's not playing to the standard that we need him right now. He's not playing to the level that he was earlier in the year. Okay, there was one time, and I'm speaking about tempo here, is why I mentioned this, but there was one time, I think late first half, I think maybe late, maybe in the first half, I don't even know at this point because of what happened, but we did run tempo. We hit, I believe, a first down play, at least 15, 20 yard play, and we're sprinting up to at least get to the line. Who knows when we planned on snapping it, because that was a mess. And he's like the last one to arrive. Like, dude, if he doesn't have the conditioning because of the time he's missed, then Davis is your best option, okay? I understand that you're paying big bucks for Hurd, that you moved Campbell to the right side in order to get Hurd and really show what he can do at left tackle. And early in the year, it looked like it was a major hit, but right now it looks like a big miss. And it looks like something that could really devolve further. I mean, if someone's out practicing him and they need to be playing in that spot, or if he's showing better in practice, then how in the heck do we get that to the field, Glenn Ellerby? Because this unit is pathetic. In year four, it's pathetic. 2022 class, they're obviously a pretty big miss. Some of those guys aren't even there anymore. Hello, Addison Nichols, that Tennessee should have been able to take mad advantage of. And, you know, to that point, we decided to rush four for most of the night. And look, it worked for most of the night. You really made life difficult on Arkansas because of the speed, because of the pressure off of the edges. James Pierce, you know, he went from playing like 15% of a game to playing like 105% of a game. It felt like, it seemed like we cut our defensive line rotation way down, and I don't know that it was the move. But again, I'm not sure what calls we made on Saturday that were the right move at this point, based on how you lost the game, based on how it unfolded, how we got there. I'm not sure what was good, what was bad, because it was mostly all bad. So that kind of is my resolution, where I stand for the clock management aspect of it, including tempo, because it just, when you don't run your tempo, you ask your offensive line to do so much more, and they are not equipped to do it right now. And I say that understanding that in 2022 especially, but also in 2021, we ran the tempo. We ran the tempo until we absolutely did not have to anymore, until we were down big or we were up big. We ran the tempo, and it had defenses reeling. It had us winning at every position across the field, it seemed like. I think it propped up a run game at that point. That was a freshman Jalen Wright, and probably the healthiest Jabari Small that we ever had until, his shoulder started really causing him long-term problems. But I just want to know where that Josh Heupel is, where that offense is, because it seemed like until Saturday, we were the most equipped that we'd been under this era to run that tempo offense, to get the ball to playmakers in space. Is that not like the calling card of Josh Heupel? And it just felt like a half, attempt to do so. And I hate that. So again, recapping one final time so far. Clock management, tempo, route tree. I don't understand the attack. It seems like we run into coverage more than we try to, get into open field. And I don't know where that breakdown is. I don't know where that breakdown is at this point. If it's a goalish issue, then I would think that we'd have analysts or Heupel himself that could go back and watch film and bottle some of those up, or at least redesign some of those looks. If it's a receiver issue, it seems like we should have double the number that we used to have to throw at teams, and we don't. We still just don't rotate them until like they're hurt or exhausted or who knows what. It just doesn't make sense. If it's a quarterback issue, I have a hard time believing that because of Nico's accuracy that we have seen, because of just the ability that we feel pretty confidently that he had. And he had a rough night, but going back to offensive line, when you get him blasted or you get him sacked over and over again to start a game, you're going to see ghosts. You're going to miss open guys. And, breaking news, Nico doesn't have the all-22 field view that we see, where we see Dylan Sampson open on the second to last play of the game, where we see Nimrod about halfway across the field on the last play of the game. He doesn't have that view. He's been the one taking the hits because of all the reasons we talked about. And also, I actually hate this reason, but he is still young. He is still young. But I will say this. His ultimate ceiling probably took a small, average hit, in my opinion, based on him running out of bounds with all of the factors that we have now. Helmet communication. Okay, we've got tablets on the sidelines. It seems like all these things should lead to exploiting looks that they've given you throughout the game. And also, it's got to go to the end zone. Should be the helmet communication would have been on. Ball has to go to the end zone, okay? All those things, he takes a little bit of a hit in my book, okay? I know he shows all the tools, everything you could want. And one new aspect that I haven't talked about quite yet is why we are not running him at all, okay? We tried to run Joe Milton more, and Joe Milton was one of the least willing runners I've ever seen in my life. And I'm not asking for you to give Nico 15 design runs in a game, but when you're stuck in not only mud, you're stuck in like quicksand offensively for a half of a game, run your quarterback, okay? If it's a draw, run a draw. If it's getting him to the edge, I think that's heavily effective because he's got great speed. He takes long strides because of his natural build. And you get an added blocker at that point where, again, the offensive line is causing you major issues. The last thing, the greatest reason that I've seen that you need to run Nico, whether it's getting him out to throw on the run, whether it's getting him, adding a blocker, picking up easier yards. Okay, did y'all see Milroe running against Georgia? And I'm not saying he's Jalen Milroe. He's not the athlete that Jalen Milroe is, but he is a good athlete, okay? Did you see the way that running quarterbacks have hurt Georgia and Alabama over the years? They've both hurt them. It happened to Georgia on a smaller scale because Peyton Thorne isn't Jalen Milroe on Saturday. Look, we've been saying all along that 10-2 probably gets you in the playoff. We're now saying you've got to split those games at worst to get it to playoff look. You just made it tougher. That goes back to me asking and begging for separation. When you're approaching the top of the conference, you've got to create separation. You've got to take steps. You're not going to do it with this offensive line, with this group of playmakers, if you're not willing to get him moving. Get him moving and throwing. Get him moving, again, with an added blocker, utilizing his speed. He's also really shifty. Somehow at that six frame, I don't understand how he has such an agility rating at just being the stilt that he is. He's got great agility for a beanpole because he's still small. But the way that they refuse to help their offensive line, to help Nico get guys open, and to help the receiver, to help everyone. Just getting him moving would help literally every aspect of this offense. It's like there's a clause in his NIL deal that said, you know, we won't do it, or he's not going to be hit, mama, we promise. Like, was there a clause for that? Because it's such a weapon in modern football, and it's especially a weapon when your offensive line can't block straight up or guys can't get open the same way. I mean, we don't even run it that often, but the way Thornton handled that scramble drill to the left on the final drive of the game was magnificent. I mean, if you have to do that to exploit Thornton's speed more so than getting one-on-one on a slant or, you know, a skinny post against Oklahoma, do whatever it takes, okay? That's the job now. The job is not to keep running the same crap into the ground, asking five to block four and failing. And then, you know, you've got Florida on the docket, and they're not going to sit back and rush four. They're not going to do it. Any team that does that now at this point, after Saturday, and after some of the issues that we saw against North Carolina State and Oklahoma, you need to be firing your DC if that's your plan of attack for Tennessee. If you just want to sit back and rush four against this offensive line, you're crazy. You're begging to lose. You're begging to get ripped apart. But also, you know, it would be no happy medium. I would never rush four. I would either rush three and drop eight, or I'm bringing like six and seven, asking them to figure it out, because they do not communicate. They do not pick guys up. If they don't block you straight up, they won't block you. Okay? Just look at some of the assignments that Stays and Spraggins and Sampson and Bishop, and, you know, coming out of the game early, I was asking for more Bishop because he just runs hard, because I don't think it's prudent to run Dylan Sampson 20 times in a game. Just like I don't want to run Nico 15 times in a game, or 10, really. I don't want to run Sampson 20, 25 times in a game to be able to pick up a measly, you know, 115 yards, you know, conservatively when he's not breaking off big runs. You've got these guys that are not improving in this area, okay? And I understand that Bishop's also a young player. He's in the same class that Nico is, but it's been an issue for like 3-4 years. Running backs not picking guys up. Offensive line communication more so in 23 and 24, and it just doesn't add up. That's not how you take steps as a program. That's not the type of program that I believe Josh Heupel wants to build. I believe that he wants to build the program that does separate on Saturday, that is undefeated in the conference, outside the conference, and is right up there with Texas and, again, Texas A&M at the top of this conference right now. It shouldn't be Mike Elko, even though that was a talented roster in a pretty good spot. Yeah, they're going to wish to have that Notre Dame game back, but it shouldn't be year one programs. And look, I'm not saying it should be Alabama losing to Vanderbilt. I'm not excusing anyone, giving anyone a pass here, because it was a bad week. But I believe that Heupel wants to build that championship level program. I think he's that level of competitor. We hear it from everyone that talks about him or that comes across him. And Saturday just did not reflect that. I know I've been all over the place, but just these questions are outrageous to me. A few other things that I want to get into before I wrap up. Again, my moaning and whining and complaining about Saturday. You know, also, let me go ahead and really acknowledge this real quick. The season is not over. This can serve as the greatest wake-up call that this team, this year's Vols team, gets. You'd like for that to come in a game where you did get the ball in the end zone there at the end of the game, or that you didn't, you know, go back to your same first half offense after those two touchdowns in the second half. You want to learn your lessons and wins. That's what I'm trying to say. It doesn't always happen like that, okay? We've seen from the greatest coaches to the worst coaches, they lose games that they're not supposed to lose. It happens. It's part of the game. Any given Saturday, that's a thing. Any given Sunday, we know it. Okay, you want to learn your lessons and wins. This team has a chance to learn a huge lesson in a loss. And I think the way that you do that, and I'm not jumping ahead yet, I'm not done talking about this game yet, I think the way that you do that, you come out and you treat Florida just like they are, okay? I know that they beat UCF, but UCF's not what we thought they were either. You know, Florida's very inconsistent at best, and you need to go make them look like that on Saturday at home. And, you know, if you'd won in Arkansas, then it would have been like the best environment that this game's seen in at least 2 years, because it was a great environment 2022, but it would have been a pressure cooker, and it still should be. All right, the season's not over. Like, if we go 3-and-out on the first couple of drives and, you know, Florida's got 3 or 6 points, whatever, then, you know, don't start booing. Don't get ridiculous. Stick with them. But you like to learn your lessons in wins. We could have learned a ton of lessons in even the ugliest win, 20-14 or 20-19, excuse me, if you just got the ball in the end zone there at the end. But you now have to learn them. You now have to split Georgia or Alabama, obviously. And the way that I want to transition back now into Arkansas is twofold here. When I think it was halftime of the waste of time that Kent State was, and now I look at it more so that Kent State was a waste of time because I wish we'd been tested more rather than play, UTC and Kent State, and look, North Carolina State was like I wish North Carolina State was the worst team that we played, because you got tested at Oklahoma, but you were still just in the driver's seat all game. You got tested for just a little while against NC State, but you won by 41, okay? Kent State, that was the biggest waste of time that I've seen in I don't know how long. But there was a big moment, either at halftime or the end of the game. Hopple's got Kublik, getting the information, getting the intel on whatever you could glean from even 5 minutes of that game, all right? And Hopple drops this gold line, all right? The opponent is nameless. It's faceless. You have to be the same every game, every minute, yada, yada. But, again, he called the opponent nameless and faceless. And I couldn't agree more, because in situations like that, you're playing against yourself more than you're playing against an opponent like Kent State. Where was that energy on Saturday? I bring all that up just to ask, where was that energy on Saturday? And then when you add in Dylan Sampson's comment about some lackadaisical moments or lackadaisical preparation, during the bye week when Hopple's teams have been so good coming off of byes, and again, I go back to just how healthy you were getting back to being. But when you have Sampson, like, that is, at worst, your second most vocal leader. And he's like the smallest guy on the team, but like that's your second biggest voice on the team, if not the absolute biggest. Because when you see team huddles, it's six in there firing guys up. Today is the day. The opponent is nameless and faceless, but when you hear him say the word lackadaisical, the big L word, coming off of a bye week, it doesn't matter who you play. That Saturday is proof of that. It is the biggest proof of that. And again, it's not like you lost to Vanderbilt or you lost to Appalachian State or an FCS team. You didn't do that. But you had an opportunity to win that game, to be undefeated, to create separation, and you didn't. Whether it was the week of preparation coming in, whether it was I don't know what during the game, because I just don't see many scenarios where it should have played out like that. That's crushing, because that's, again, you're not treating the opponent like it's nameless and faceless. You're treating the opponent like I don't know. You treated that Arkansas defense like they were the 85 Bears or something, because you couldn't move the ball. You didn't move guys off the ball. And that's basically, again, what we asked them to do when we didn't run the tempo that we're used to. The other thing that I want to at least theorize on this, because we know, if you're plugged in, if you're listening to other guys, to former players, to other podcasts, et cetera, this team practices in the mornings. And I'm asking, is it time to get the freak away from that? Because, okay, 2021, again, we talked. I don't want to revisit 2021. Anything, we did better than we ever expected in 2021. But in 2022, you dropped the ball in the biggest way possible in South Carolina. In 2023, you played in the swamp. You're not one there in 20 years at the time. We know that. But, again, do we need to move practices from the morning to the night? Because, again, it happened again. And I've already talked about it some. But if that's a factor in this, stop practicing in the morning. I mean this seriously, because I've heard – if you listen to like Jason Swain, he talks about how that can help the team get up for the noon games and the early games when the opponent is garbage. But if it's time to get away from that, we have to do it, because this is not sustainable. And sure, it's sustainable from the standpoint of being average or slightly above average, but it is not sustainable to take steps and keep losing these games. Like, again, the ones that I've just laid out again. And I know that Missouri last year, that wasn't a night game, but something happens on the road and the preparation has to be different. Or again, you're not treating it as you should. You're not treating it as a nameless, faceless opponent. What have you? I don't know. I'm just pitching it. Obviously, Hopple's not going to listen to me. If he did listen to this podcast, that would be insane. But it's time to shake things up. You can't keep going and dropping road night games, what have you, to teams that you should, that you have the talent on, that you have the speed on. All these things are in your favor, and you keep dropping these games. We, you know, we keep doing it, and it's ridiculous. It's as bad as anything good that we've done, because it just brings down your ceiling, and it brings your ceiling down from having a chance to walk into the playoff, or in 2022's case, to, you know, to get in as a one-loss team. But now it's expanded, and if you miss 12-team playoffs, that is so much worse than missing a 14 playoff, especially coming off of what we were. So you just can't keep doing this. It's no good. It's again, just brings your ceiling down. It makes your ceiling the roof. I'm just riffing at this point and making fun of Jordan, but you can't keep doing it. All right, really just want to close this episode out with like two additional questions that I've come across, that I've seen, you know. And if you've stuck with me this long, I really appreciate it, because, you know, just today getting to the point really where I could, A, have the schedule availability, but also have the, you know, the ability overall to talk about a performance like that, because it didn't look like much that we've seen from Josh Heupel when you factor in the good, you know, the stuff that was unexpected when it all started out, how much better it was than we anticipated. But, you know, getting to the point where I could talk about this just from a schedule and just from kind of sucking up and accepting what happened Saturday. So thank you for bearing with me. But I want to talk about this comment that was probably two episodes. You know, Dan touched on it as well, and just kind of want to give my take on it. A comment that said, can Tennessee correct the issues on the O-line and Nico doesn't look comfortable in Heupel's offense? Was it a mistake to sit Nico last year to grow him? First, on the offensive line, it is time for Ellerbe to earn this contract, okay? The good for Glenn Ellerbe, okay? He's got the most out of Cooper Mays. Probably no other program could have got out of Cooper Mays what we've got out of, just when you factor in his size, okay? Darnell Wright was not trending to be a first-round pick when the former staff was here and coaching him, yada, yada. Good things. The bad things, the rest of it probably, especially, again, when you go back to the tempo not helping them out, when you look at zero Heupel recruits playing, you know, I'm not talking about transfers. I'm talking about high school recruits, and it has ticked up, but they have to make the field now. They have to make it on the field, and they have to start being difference makers, or you have to fix your Glenn Ellerbe problem. The way you do that this year is you have to get back to your tempo. You have to get back to a blazing tempo. If that means that Lance Hurd can't keep up, that means Lance Hurd is out of the game. I'm not taking no for an answer on that. You have to get back to the tempo if you want to help out this offense on the offensive line. That is one of the really only weaknesses of this team. You know, we can now say the receivers are more of a problem than they are a solution, but the offensive line is your biggest problem. There is no hiding it. There is no getting around it. It's got to get better. And if it takes someone other than Glenn Ellerbe, that has to be a move that's made this offseason, okay? It has to be. It's tough to fix in season, because then you're asking guys that didn't earn the job through spring, summer, and fall, or in practice and game week, to go then and outperform guys that did win the job for some reason. I'm not at practice. None of us are. You're asking someone like that to step up during the season while they're, you know, drinking from a fire hose, you know, and managing everything on their plate. Okay, that's what you're asking, but it has to be supplanted by the tempo. It absolutely has to be. There's no other natural path for it to get that much better. There just isn't. Nico, okay, Nico doesn't look comfortable in Heupel's offense. I'm not there yet. We haven't asked much of him through the first four games, and then I'm not convinced we asked much of him on Saturday. I think he got sped up and he got hit a lot early. And he made the dumbest football decision that you can make at the end of the game. The situation there is that he's a second-year guy playing in, what, his second road game, whereas Milton was at least a third- or fourth-year guy when he did it. I'm not excusing it. I'm just laying out the differences. He's looked comfortable to me in other games. I mean, like, after one of the interceptions, after the first interception against North Carolina State, he came back and went right down the field. You know, I know that he didn't have a ton of time. He didn't have a great performance against Oklahoma, but you can't tell me that he doesn't run this offense well. But again, my thing on that is that this is not Tennessee or Heupel's offense. This is not it. The route tree is so much more limited. Don't know the solution to that. I pitched it earlier. I don't know what it is. The route tree is different. The play designs are different. That has to be fixed as well, or we'll be getting to a really quick point of saying, not only are you looking at replacing Glenn Ellerbe, but you're also, you got to do something in the Halsley spot. Maybe he's a quarterback coach at most. I don't think that's it, because I think Heupel does so much more in this offense than, you know, or I'm sorry, I think the OC does so much less in this offense. I don't think Golish was some savant. I think that Heupel has a huge hand in this offense. He's seeing stuff that tells him to limit the tempo or you know, to limit the play design, whatever, and we have to improve from that. Do I expect Nico to take a big jump from his first year starting 2024 to 2025? Most definitely. Would I be shocked if Nico's back a fourth-year college player? I still would, okay? But the team will not be the same next year. That's why a run this year, that's why separation at the top this year was so much more important, because next year you're looking at like one of the current five offensive linemen being on campus. And again, I go back to zero Heupel recruits out of high school playing on this offensive line. You got two transfers that they recruited that are your two liabilities at this moment in Campbell and Hurd. Then you're losing Spraggins, you're losing Cooper Mays, you're losing probably Carrick. I don't even know. You're losing three or four-fifths of your offensive line is brand new next year. Okay, that's a huge problem. But the bigger problem is your defensive line. All these guys that have, you know, James Pierce obviously being the crown jewel, all those guys are gone next year for the most part. Yes, there's some youngsters to be really excited about. Jordan Ross is going to bounce back from that punt, that roughing the punter, running into the kicker, whatever. He's going to bounce back from that. He's going to be a great player at Tennessee. If he's got the speed as an edge rusher to go block punts, we know he's going to be a good athlete. We know that he's currently got one of the best position groups for defensive line coaching him. But you will not have the same group of guys. You will not have the same depth. You will not have, you know, you're not going to be looking at 12, 13, 14 guys that you can rotate in and out next year. And again, you're looking at losing the very best one in James Pierce. You know, and you'll be lucky to hold on to some of those other guys that are making big impacts when the NFL is going to be, you know, looking at calling their name. So all reasons that you have to work on fixing this stuff now, that Tennessee has to treat this loss like Dan talked about when, you know, when it was Clemson in 2016. And again, I'm not previewing Florida yet. I hope to later in this week. But you absolutely have to take out Saturday on Florida. You have to treat them for 100% what they are. Inconsistent, lack of speed and playmakers. You have to treat Florida for what they are. You cannot play an average Tennessee-Florida game. You cannot lose this game. I'm not even getting, you know, when I say play an average Tennessee-Florida game, again, you need to convince me that steps are being taken on the offensive line, that steps are being taken across the field offensively, other than Dylan Sampson. Dylan Sampson does get a pass because played his heart out on Saturday. But again, everything else has got to take steps. It's got to improve. And, you know, otherwise you're going to be asking your defense to not take you to another tier up in college football, but just, again, you're going to be asking your defense to carry you to like 8, maybe 9 wins if you don't take these steps offensively when the talent has increased so greatly. So I'm going to wrap it up with that. Again, just a huge frustrated, disheveled rant, because that's what games like Saturday, that's the state that they put me in. But I do feel like I at least checked off the things coming out of this game that I wanted to check off and get talked about and complain about them, really. But also try to highlight some solutions and ask the questions of, you know, what they're going to do for the other issues that this team has. So, thank you so much again for bearing with me as we work through the Arkansas outcome that it was. Appreciate you guys so much. Continue to check in. Give us those subscriptions on YouTube. Hit us up on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your stuff. God bless. Go be gone.